Pille, who's always a no, but I have to say, so he's a long-term member. He's a guy, but he's loving it. And he will tell us more prominently.
Thank you. So that's my typing. I removed one word from Danon's title to not raise your suspicions too early. So it will just be, for now, it will just be non-magic quantum verity. So we all know that quantum verity is non-renormalizable. It's not equivalent, the statement of non-renormalizability is not equivalent to the statement that quantum verity does not make sense. It's actually a prediction about a certain EV behavior of the theory. And this community, blue quantum gravity, is came from community. We claim that we do quantum gravity, but we like to use certain polynomial formulations. We start from certain polynomial formulations of gravity and then attempt non-vegetative quantization. So we must be able to see the same UV behavior predicted by usual determinative quantum gravity in other theories. For this reason, it's desirable to see how this non-minimalizability manifests itself in these polynomial formulations. And this is the main motivation. In this talk, I will work with the so-called Klebanski formulation of GR, and I'll explain why I choose this among other polynomial formulations. The main message of my talk will be that Klebanski action is not complete. It turns out that there are lots of other terms of mass dimension 4 compatible with all the symmetries that can be added to the action. And this is actually a very simple dimension of this, as we'll see very soon. So just quantum field theory tells us that we have to add, if these terms can appear, we have to add them from the beginning. We have to modify the action and add all these terms. Once this is done, we get a new theory. It looks very much like Klebanski theory, like GR, but it's not. This is a theory with more degrees of freedom in it. And so we don't have to expect that the UV behavior of this theory is the same as that of GR. And we'll see, I'll try to argue that it's a different UV behavior. Very importantly, this new theory is not metric theory. It's not about metric theory. And I'll explain in what sense. Okay, that's the main message. So polynomial formulations of gravity. Before we can discuss those, let's discuss the usual for Einstein's formulation of GR, which is about metrics. So that's the action. Let us discuss perturbative quantum gravity in this formulation. This is something we all more or less know, but I want to remind you of the key facts. One does this perturbative quantum gravity by decomposing the metric. We write a G mu is the background metric, which is usually, usually taken to be constant. Plus, there is a fluctuating field perturbation. Then we expand the action in parts of this perturbation, and the zeroth order is just the Einstein reduction for the perturbation. The linear order vanishes because of the equations of motion. Then we have next term is quadratic perturbation, and this is kinetic term for the theory. Let me show you. I've made a copy from one paper. Let me show you how this expansion is looking like. This is a quadratic term, as you see. So this is a quadratic term. It contains, you can see very clearly, but you don't have to. For my purposes, you only have to see the lengths of these formulas. And I'll explain what you have in this quadratic term. In the quadratic term, you have kind of dh, dh. Plus there is also term r. R-A-H. Remember that there is 1 over G Newton in front of the action. To give, in quantum field theory, we usually don't have dimensional constants in front of the action, so we usually absorb them into the fields. This is what we do here. So I'll put square root of G in front of my H, so that H gets mass dimension 1. Then this guy is not here. And this is the kinetic term. You see that it has required mass dimension 4, because each field has dimension 1, this is another 2, current check is more than dimension 2, so it's a good candidate term. Then the cubic term starts from, well, you see it contains terms, so this is quadratic, cubic, there is h, this is h, one derivative, so it's h, one derivative of h, another derivative of h. There is also term r, h. You can see that mass dimension of these terms is 5. So we have a coupling constant of mass dimension minus 1 from. And so you clearly see that the coupling constant of the theory has negative mass dimension. This is why, just by bidimensional grounds, the theory is non-normalizable. The fact that it's not renormalizable just means that there will be more and more divergences arising, powers of the curvature, invariants constructed from the curvature. And these terms that have to be added to the action to observe the divergences are with undetermined coefficients. And so you don't know UV completion on the theory, because you expect that all these terms will become important in UV. I think I should also discuss briefly the structure of divergences arising. Slide. So one loop divergences, the optional divergences, are listed here, which is all possible curvature invariants. This one is topological, it's a total derivative. These two vanish on shell. And so this is why perturbative quantum merit is actually on shell one loop finite.
If you include matter, still not going to be normalized.
Actually, I'm preferring not to discuss matter at all in this talk. I'm talking about pure quantum gravity. So let me try to ignore matter, because I mean, it will lead us too far if we do that. So let's talk about pure quantum gravity, no matter at all.
Well, we have matter.
Yeah, we have matter. Yeah. I just want to understand, we have a theory of pure quantum gravity in strange formulation. I want the main motivation is to see how non-renormalizability manifests itself in this formulation. And for this purpose, I can ignore matter. At two loop, this is all possible counter terms that can be added. The first two lines are zero on shell because they only construct, they contain either a curvature scalar or Ricci tensor, so they vanish on shell in vacuum. The other two terms on shell are proportional to each other, and so there is a possible on shell divergence of two loops. An explicit calculation shows that this divergence is there. No miracle happens. Just two diagrams. They add up to the divergent coefficient. So quantum gravity is indeed, even on shell, problematic. Well, it's non-renormalizable in the sense that one has to add this to the action with undetermined coefficients and so on. So no miracle happens in the on shell. It's a quick reminder of usual perturbative quantum gravity. Now to the first order formulas, to these polynomial formulations. In this first order formalism, one has an action in which contains only first derivatives of the fields. So one introduces a new field which is a tetrad or a frame field, and an independent from it connection, which I call omega here. This is actually, this is a cosmological term. That's the usual term which becomes the Ricci scalar. So the point is that on shell, namely when equations of function are satisfied, one of the equations here is that covariant derivative of theta with respect to omega is zero. This equation relates theta and omega, says that omega is a curvature. Sorry, omega is a connection, spin connection, compatible with the metric defined by the frame. And after that solution is plugged into the action, you get back to the usual Einstein reduction. So that's the first order formulation. Let's talk about Newton constant, how it appears here. Again, it's a coefficient in front of the action. You see the frame field, well, because it's related to the metric, it's dimensionless, naturally. Curvature has dimension 2. Cosmological constant has dimension 2. And the rest, the remaining mass dimension 2, comes from this inverse inverse Newton constant. It's calling, it's natural to observe this Newton constant into the fields. Right? It's very unusual to have dimensionful constants in front of the action. So let's do that. This is possible. We just rescale the frame field in such a way that it receives mass dimension 1. And then these are mass dimensions of the rescale fields. One introduces the dimensionless cosmological constant, which is just a product of G Newton times lambda. So in this formulation, Newton constant never appears. These fields receive their canonical mass dimensions, and there is no Newton constant. I'd like to stress this point, that there is no Newton constant in pure gravity, unless you expand around the background. Because there is Newton constant if we couple things to matter, but not in pure gravity. And when we expand things around the background, Newton constant appears for the reasons I explained.
Whether you have the scattering of gravitational waves,
yes.
There will be a Newton constant there.
Well, that's the intuition you get from the turbulent treatment. From the expansion, that's what I said. That's the coupling constant that appears when you expand around the flat background. You see, you cannot, of course, you assign the canonical mass dimension to the fluctuating field, 1. But you cannot, it's unnatural to rescale the metric, because metric has to be dimensionless. So if you have a background metric, well, this is where Newton constant arises in this decomposition. And of course, this fact is going to play into control. But there is no Newton constant in these polynomial formulations. This fact has been noticed, of course, and people were trying to explore it. I'll leave you.
So does this mean that you are equally, you can do perturbation theory or do strong coupling at the same time? There is no dependence on coupling?
I would say at this stage there is coupling constant in the connection, there is gauge field coupling constant. But that one is not related in any obvious way to Newton constant.
I just don't understand. Do you have a low energy propagating some effective degrees of freedom?
You will see, not quite. You will see very quickly. No, this is not quite.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So how would I exactly see zero gravity?
What is zero gravity? Oh, just switching out.
How do I know the gravity is zero?
Well, how do you interpret it in the usual metric formula? What is zero gravity?
G is zero.
But then there is no gravity because it just sits in front of the action.
In the field equation.
Oh, yeah, if you have stress, if you have matter, then of course matter does not gravitate, but there is no matter.
If you slash the solution, there are two reasons for zero gravity. One is either M is zero or G is zero, or both are zero.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I see what you're saying, but let's face it, we have the action. Yeah. This is a possible, there is no Newton constant. Newton constant gets absorbed into the field. There is no operational way to define Newton constant in this theory.
To some extent, you just want to make the logical and rather obvious point that you can absorb Newton's constant into the definition of the pure gravitational action in this way, and then you want to understand how you can interpret that and where it leads, right?
Yes.
So why don't we just let him do it
and
see where it leads?
So quantization. Can we use that polynomial formulation for quantization? Yes, we can. In 3D, this is exactly what was done by Witten. In this formulation, one clearly sees that gravity is superimmunal as one type of divergence, which is very easily absorbed into normalization of the fields. in this theory, well, there is nothing bad happens. There is no fluctuation of space-time. There is no space-time phenomenon, no fluctuations of geometry. This theory behaves perfectly, actually, as a quantum theory. It just reduces to the modeling space of constant curvature mechanicals. It's just quantum mechanics on modeling spaces. Well, it's very, very simple, beautiful theory. And the fact that there is no Newton constant, no scale in this theory, you see that in by quantizing the theory. There is no dimensionful scale in that theory. There is no blank scale at which you get some fluctuations in space time measuring. However, this doesn't work entirely for a very simple reason. If you look at this in 3D, there is no one theta is not there. The action is just theta. Because there is a kinetic term, which is theta d omega. Just in higher dimensions, in 4 and higher, there is no kinetic term here. So we just cannot apply usual perturbative differences to this action. What one can do is, of course, expand around the background, but then we're back to the previous story. We will have to introduce, well, as soon as you introduce the background, Newton constant will appear, and then the usual non-randomizability, as we know, will appear. Before I continue, it's interesting to note that this action, the first order population action, is almost denormalizable. If you try to think of adding some other terms to this action, which are compatible with all the symmetries and constructed from the fields you have, there's just, well, actually one other term that you can add, and people often add it. I didn't write it down, but the reason why you can add something else is that there are two traces on the SL2C, which plays a role of internal rotations in this theory. And so here I use just one of the traces. Here I don't action, but another trace can be used. So there is an extra term that can be added to this action. There is no extra term for the cosmological constant because that's just kind of issues, but there is extra term of this form.
So is this action equivalent to the Einstein-Hilbert action?
Yeah, it is.
So if you add an extra term, what happens?
Well, it's a topological term. On shell, it's topological. But it's often used in our community, that extra term, because it's related to the so-called Lignesi parameter in quantizations. But there is an extra term, topological term. So it's interesting that one can simply not add anything to the theory. But of course, if you have a background, then you can add lots of things using the background. Just from the fields that you have, there's nothing you can add. So in that sense, the theory is, well, it's complete. Nothing can be added. But we cannot quantize it. So
there are no propagating modes.
There are no propagating modes. Well, it simply starts with a cubic term of the fields. We just don't have methods applicable to those situations. We cannot. The only thing we know is how to expand around Gaussian. Yes?
You do know the integral of e to the x cubed.
Yes, but nobody developed perturbation theory that starts with one could try.
I try sometimes.
It's
not necessarily done.
It's not done.
Okay. Okay.
But it's probably hard. Well, you would have to show that it works.
Yeah.
There is another interesting related work that by Vida, McCarthy, and Young. 89. They used also first order formulation of gravity, the so-called Palatini version. In Palatini, there is no frame field, there is no tetrad, there is metric and independent Christoffel symbols. And the two gauge fields get related to each other on shell. In this formulation, there is a kinetic term. It starts from quadratic term. So, but they found that there is a mismatch between the symmetries of quadratic and cubic term. So in spite of the fact that there is no Newton, no negative mass dimension coupling concept in this theory, there is some other problem, namely this mismatch. So this mismatch means that kinetic term is not invertible, and you simply cannot start perturbation theory. The way to go around this problem is to, again, choose a background, expand around the background, and then you have usual perturbation theory with these usual problems, of course. So they found that this mismatch, they said that this mismatch is manifestation of non-renormalizability. But there is a lesson to learn here, that it seems that the non-real realizability, especially in its form, which is due to appearance of dimensional coupling constant, is because of the background, because we use expansion around the constant background. Anyway, let me go to Pygmalion's formulation. In Pygmalion's formulation, and this is why I use it, because there is a kinetic term, so I can explain. The idea of this formulation is that, remember that in first order formulation, one separated a metric from the connection, and the two got related only on shell. In Pygmalion's formulation, the idea was to separate the curvature as well. So you have three independent fields, metric-like field, connection, and curvature-like field. And the three get related on shell only. So that's the action. And if you remember the action I had a few slides before, Einstein-Cartan, what I did in this action, I just replaced theta-theta by B, which is a two-form, and I added another term to the action. So the reason why this term is there is that not every B, not every two-form is of the type theta-theta. Not every two-form is from like the form forms. To impose that constraint, we add a Lagrange multiplier. Varying is expected, we can get the equation which guarantees that. So equations of motion, or the Lagrange equations for this theory are, there is a simplicity equation or matricity equation. That's the one you get by varying with respect to Lagrange multiplier. There is this equation which you get by varying with respect to B. There is an equation that relates D to the connection. And after you solve this equation, you get matricity. Then this equation implies that A is compatible with the metric. And then this equation implies that this psi is the wild part of the curvature. It's the only part that is non-zero.
Are there any degenerate solutions?
Yeah, there are some strange solutions and also ambiguity. For example, this is not the only solution. There are some discrete ambiguities, but also degenerate solutions. I'll be ignoring those. So that's the theory I will work with. You see, there is now a kinetic term, but this term is problematic. I'll come to it very quickly. So there is no dimensional coupling constant after rescalings. In the beginning, we rescale all the fields. Mass dimensions, I think I wrote them somewhere, but mass dimension, B gets mass dimension 2, A gets mass dimension 1, and psi, which is also in scale, it used to be curvature, so it used to have mass dimension 2, but I've observed that Newton constant into it, so it has now zero mass dimension. Now, there is a kinetic term, but there will be some problems with it, but at least there is a quadratic term, so we can think of starting some derivative expansion. But there is no kinetic term from psi, so it's not clear how to integrate it from psi. The idea I will follow here is that let's keep it classical, let's keep it as external field and see what happens. Because we cannot integrate over it, let's not try it yet. So let's postpone integration over it. And well, this is comparable to what we often do in other theories, like you can consider usual QED in external electromagnetic field. Keep that field classical, integrated reference. You learn a lot about QED. Not all information is contained in the corresponding effective action, but a lot of information is contained.
That's the theoretical one diagram for psi as an external field. Would you generate a kinetic?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're trying to see. So, of course, that's what I have here. If you compute one loop diagram, kinetic term for A will be generated. This is why it's not consistent, not dequantizing. We'll see what happens. Another example, much closer one in spirit, this is the Gauss-Newton model. It's a very simple two-dimensional model. You have two-dimensional fermion, the usual kinetic term for the fermion. And then you have kind of a mass term here. But the mass is a field, so it's an auxiliary field. Sigma. And you see mass dimensions are fermion has mass dimension half, which means that this field has mass dimension 1. And so we know that it's possible to add an extra term like that. Well, it will get generated if we integrate over fermion, if we integrate one loop. fermented one loop. But imagine we start without this term. Then the theory is very, very boring. It's a trivial theory, because if you vary with respect to sigma, you get the constraint that either left loopers or right loopers are absent in this theory. So it's a trivial, non-interacting, very, very boring theory. But however, if you generate this extra term, you have more degrees of freedom in it, because you have both left and right loopers. It's interacting, it's asymptotically free, it is very non-trivial, there's chiral symmetry gradient in this theory, and so on. It becomes a very interesting theory. We'll see that somewhat similar phenomenon of change of number of degrees of freedom happens in Lebesgue theory. So let's now discuss what are possible counterterms of Lebesgue theory. These are mass dimensions that I wrote here. Now, because we have field of mass dimension zero, it's, yes?
Maybe you're going to say this, but is Lebesgue with psi treated as an external field in topological field theory fundamental?
No.
But with psi zero, it would be a topological
field theory. Yeah, with psi zero, it would be a topological field theory. I don't know in which way you would be able to call it topological field theory.
Find out what the Hilbert space is in counter-dimension.
Well, it will depend on the profile of psi, most probably. So it's clear that all powers of psi will get generated, right? So in particular, all terms of this type, there will be divergences like this. And to observe those divergences, we have to have the corresponding counterterms of projection. You see, here is psi to some power, like a matrix. And I forgot to say, I switched from SL2C notation to cell-dual notation. So my indices are now SU2 indices. It's what original Lebesgue formulation was. It was self-dual in internal space, so to say. You shouldn't worry about it too much. It's a self-dual formulation. And then there are all possible traces that you can see here. So we see that, well, all parts of curvature appear. And in that sense, the theory is as non-renormalizable as it was in the usual formulation. In the usual formulation, it was non-renormalizable because we have Newton constant dimension 4. Here we have field of mass dimension 0. All possible parts appear. And actually, it's almost the same non-renormalizability, because remember, I rescaled psi, I absorb Newton constant into it. So actually, well, if you reabsorb it, if you put it back, then there will be just powers of Newton constant and powers of dimensionful curvature. So it's, we're seeing the same non-renormalizability.
Probably the reason is that psi doesn't have any propagating laws. So you expect this.
Well, I don't want to have any interpretation yet. I just want to see what are all possible terms. Let me continue with my analysis. There are, of course, other possible terms, namely.
What's the derivative terms in psi? Derivative terms in psi.
We'll come to that. There are terms, all these terms are, they don't have any derivatives in psi. But you see, terms of the type FF, BF, and BB can appear. Obviously, because this is the most general Lagrangian compatible with symmetries. If we, for some reason, decide to ignore derivatives of psi, but I'll come to those terms as well. So, if this is the most general Lagrangian, again, there is still infinite number of all possible divergences, so this is as badly non-renormalizable as the usual metric formulation. But now we can do something. As we can do in usual metric formulation, because I've been field redefinitions. So I'm playing this game now. It's possible to shift B by multiple of the curvature in such a way that the term FF gets cancelled and the term BF gets put in its canonical form. So the action by this field B redefinition, the action gets the form we started from, namely is BF plus something times BB. Where this something is, well, it's a reasonably complicated thing, but not too complicated. And this something, you should think of it as some kind of power series. in part site.
Won't there be some kind of measure factor that is there in the interior? Can there be some natural measure in the space of field?
That's a good question. Well, you see, it's not multiplicative renormalization. We're even ignoring those multiplicative renormalizations as far as the measure is concerned, usually. Well, I didn't think about
it. So you may ghosts.
There will be ghosts. There will be ghosts. Well, yeah, it doesn't seem that this shift in the field will introduce any change in the measure.
Well, this is a translation.
Yeah, it's okay. But now, let's also redefine the psi. So what we have is a complicated power series of psi. And again, maybe something I forgot to say. Psi was traceless. That was the condition equivalent to metricity. Let me go back. This is important point. That's the Euler Lagrange equations, which you get by varying with respect to psi. And you see there is non-zero right hand side. This is exactly the trace part, which doesn't have to be zero. So psi is traceless to generate these equations. Now, the key point is that as soon as we start adding all these powers of psi, the whole thing is no longer traceless. So we are going to lose metricity.
So you drop the lambda b squared terms?
No, drop. It's absorbed, yeah. You can think that all these expansions start with lambda b is a positive term. So now I do an outfield definition. I say that let's call the traceless part of that huge series a new field, big phi. It's a function of psi. By definition, it's traceless. Plus, there is a trace part. Now, I can just, well, we don't know what psi was. It was, so I can call it a bare field, and this one is renormalized. So what we have in the action after renormalization is, of course, what you should call the physical. Right? So the physical traceless field is our curvature field. But we got another term now, which is a trace. And, well, of course, you can, at least in principle, you can invert this relation and think that the bare field is a function of this renormalized phi. And then you substitute it here, and then you get a function, trace function as a function of this renormalized traceless phi. So that's what I'm going to do. And so we have renormalized action. It's BF plus this set of terms. This is traceless. And we got a new term in the action, which is a trace. It's important to know that this term plays a role of cosmological constant. You see, it's curvature dependent cosmological constant. It's not constant anymore. But it enters the action exactly like the cosmological constant, but it's curvature dependent. Well, in particular, you can expand this trace term into powers of phi. It will start with this term plus higher order terms. So you see that non-renormalizability boils down to just having undetermined coefficients in this term. This already starts looking different from the usual non-renormalizability. Because you see, as I'll explain now, this term means modifications of gravity, departure. Usual Einstein's GR, and we see that non-renormalizability is somehow important only for those terms. So, modifications of gravity. Now, we can vary that action with respect to phi and get a new metricity equation. The equation is no longer metricity, that's the equation. It just no longer means that B comes from the metric. There is still interesting content in this equation, but I will not go into that. Such a lot can be said about classification of all possible b's and so on. But it's no longer metric. So, well, that's the conclusion. If you add all possible counter terms, well, not all possible because I didn't treat derivative ones, but if you add at least some of the counter terms, the theory is no longer about metrics. The theory is modified. And this is very similar to what happens in Gauss-Negron model, with and without a sigma squared term. If you don't add all possible terms for sigma, well, we have one theory with it's a trivial theory with only, say, leftovers. But if you add all possible terms for sigma, namely sigma squared, then you have a very different theory with different number of degrees of freedom. Same happens here. Now, this is theory is physically changed.
Yeah, but the number of degrees of freedom does not change. The number of B is the same, and the number of equations is the same. So it's no longer a metric. You still have the same number of degrees of freedom.
Well, it's a different, well, it's a different theory.
Yeah,
and,
I agree.
But you're switching on the non-metric part. So you allow this non-metricity.
If you count the number of B's minus the number of constraints, then this doesn't change at all.
Yeah, this doesn't change. So that's true.
But the nature of the degrees of freedom changed. They're not mm-hmm. metric, but the numbers of them.
Do you mean it is not metric on shell, is it?
Yes. Well, it wasn't metric on shell even before. It's not metric on shell now. Well, maybe that's a good point. So, let's now talk about what are these corrections. Maybe these corrections obviously mean that theory is wrong, because it's manifestly not correct, for example, in solar systems. But typical dimensionless curvatures in our solar system are extremely small. Well, to dimensionalize the curvature, I use the natural units. So I don't use Planck units. I use the size of the system times the dimension of the curvature. You can argue that if you put Planck lengths here, because it will be even smaller. But in these natural units, that's a typical 10 to the minus 5 is a typical dimensionless curvature in solar system. And that's kind of on the edge of the sun, where we do all the experiments testing GR. So, well, powers of 10 to the minus 5, of course, wouldn't be usable. But the correction is of type curvature squared. So, of course, it wouldn't be visible in the solar system, even if it's there. And then I want to say that, well, corrections should become important on scales. Well, I would say that on large scales, where radius of curvature approaches the size of the system. So, but this is arguable, we'll come back to that, but I want to say that the corrections should become important on large scales.
Sorry, I'm a bit confused about
yes.
this. Curvature is a mass or a distance cube, so it blows up when the distance goes to zero.
It's a formula. How do you? I'm just saying that in typical where you test GR, typical situations, that's the type. This is the. This is how much curvature you have. You get this intuition by adding matter to the system. This is why you have something blowing up when measuring this in pure quantum gravity. Why would anything blow up on small scales, on short distance?
Do you have any propagation in your equation?
We will see. Yes, there will be some propagation now.
Well,
this interpretational questions will be the hardest, and I'm sure we will not again. I will propose my interpretation, and then I'm sure most of you people agree with it. But let's come back to that in a second.
I'm just sort of confused about a technical point in the formula. The middle term looks dimensionless if you put in c squared, but the left term, I thought psi was unitless.
Oh, you mean
yeah.
The fact that I set c to 1 here?
Yeah, I know that, but the term on the left, you've got a length squared times.
Oh, sorry, this is the dimension full guy.
Oh, okay.
That's the wild curvature in Schwarzschild.
Once you've got
GL over RQ.
There's, all right.
Yeah. This is just to see what kind of dimensionless curvatures we have in our solar system. Just say that they're smaller. Well, then, dark energy. It's really common speculation. I like the speculation very much, so I'm going to tell it to you. Remember that the modifications we got were of the type of curvature-dependent cosmological constant. Yeah, so this is where speculation comes from. So in this theory, there is a term that plays a role of cosmological constant, but it's not cosmological constant. It's kind of curvature squared of the universe. So that term may play a role, cosmological constant, may play expansion, may cause accelerated expansion in this theory. And the reason why it's so small, because it's curvature squared, curvature has moved in the universe. So there could be some possibility for a mechanism here, which is what I'm mentioning here. Finally, other counter terms, derivative ones. These counter terms are possible, but they start with very high values. You see, need power 3 for this wild curvature. Just think, try to write something in terms of forms. And you will see that. Or you have this type of term, d psi d psi f, or d here, with all possible powers of psi here, but also fourth order, first derivative, with all possible powers of psi. All these terms could be, in principle, are possible. So we have to worry about them. When we have a quantum theory, we have to see whether they arise or not. But another point is that for small curvatures, even these terms, even if they arise, they're not important because it starts with q psi to the fifth. So in principle, that modification psi squared is very robust. That's the first leading modification we should expect, independently of all these worries about derivatives of psi. So quantum theory, finally. We'll do some calculations, finally. So we would like to do quantum theory. There was a kinetic term in the actual, so we should be able to do something. But then we have the same problem as Deser and Pauli faced in their work. There is a mismatch between symmetries of the quadratic and cubic terms. Well, that's very easy to see. Because, for example, df plus, well, lambda dd, that's what should play a role of kinetic term. And this guy should play a role of interaction. But of course, this is a topological theory. It has much more symmetry than the theory of this thing. So kinetic term is degenerate. So one might say, well, again, this will kill everything. Nothing is possible here. But or one has to expand on a constant diagram. So to avoid that problem, I'm proposing a trick, well, not my trick, before I use it, it's a trick of introducing extra auxiliary field. You introduce it in such a way that full action gets the symmetry of gets the symmetry you want, that actually didn't have. So in this case, I'll introduce field in such a way that the full action has topological symmetry. Then I can honestly fix that topological symmetry. So let's see how it works. Let me now, for convenience, define a new field. It's a notation. I just call lambda, so this constant term, plus psi, a new matrix, lambda AB. And then I'll rescale field B by lambda AB, A to minus 1, so that the action has this form. It's more convenient to work with it in this form. It's the same thing, nothing changed. Just rescale B. So let me now introduce a new field, eta, this Stackelberg field, which is Lie algebra valued 1 form. And so I rewrite the action in this form. You can see that when eta is equal to 0, then you are back to this theory, because then this term f squared is cancelled by the algebra f squared. So that's the trick.
So it's easy to do quantizing with theory starting from BF.
Yeah, it's the same, similar trick. Yeah, very, very similar trick what they do. But there is an approach to Jan-Mills theory, which tries to embed Jan-Mills theory into topological BF theory. And a very similar trick is played there. So that's the action. Symmetries are, now we have this topological symmetry, which was problematic, which caused kinetic time to be degenerate. That's a symmetry. There is enough symmetry to completely kill this field eta. Of course, you can set it to 0 if you want to. This is one possible gauge fixing. But there is another more interesting gauge fixing. And this one is self-dual, which is also the one used in works on BF and Jan-Mills theory. So then you say that, remember, B is a 2-form with values in the algebraic facility, but it's a 2-form. Now, when you have what you quantize, you typically, to gauge fixed, you introduce a background metric. So you can require B as a two-form to be self-dual with respect to the background metric. And that's the gauge fixing. Just simple counting shows that it kills enough degrees of freedom. It's more non-trivial to show that this is indeed a good gauge fixing in this problem. Any field configuration can be brought to that.
Very easy.
Well, those papers by Cataneo, they have a proof. Some people say that the proof is wrong. I'm not an expert on this. The only abstractions I know for this gauge are global. Okay. If the bundle is non-trivial, there are abstractions to this gauge. But I don't know if any abstractions if it's a trivial bundle. So it's a technical question. I prefer not to spend much time on it. If you don't like this gauge, well, one can obviously introduce another gauge.
What is this counting? Is it
just the counting is correct, yeah, the counting.
There is as much sub-dual
yes, there is.
Not sub-dual one form.
Well, actually, I'm skipping something here, because when you introduce this, there will also be ghost per ghost. So when you do the counting, you have to take into account those skills as well. The counting is not that simple. But we can show you the details. So now what we have? We have a theory in which, well, psi didn't have kinetic time, we cannot do anything. But you can see that A, this field, also doesn't have a kinetic term. So we've introduced this auxiliary field, but it didn't completely remove the degeneracy. So I would like to keep that A constant as well, non-fluctuating, with the interpretation that, you see, when integrating over eta, I'm integrating over fluctuations of the connection. Yes, Kim?
Yeah, in the previous step, you removed the kinetic term. Or the, if you like, if you're still thinking of psi as an external field, the kinetic term has a psi.
No.
The propagator has a psi in it.
Well, if you...
lambda, sorry, lambda.
Oh, lambda, yeah. Yeah. I never read lambda, lambda. It's always
no, propagator. No, I'm sorry, the lambda AB.
Well, it's here.
Right, so as soon as you make with equation 19,
yes.
There's no longer a kinetic term. I mean, the rescaling that you did to
there is why. I mean, you just keep this first order term here, and that's the whole thing is kinetic.
And express in terms of psi.
Oh, the big psi is not part of the kinetic term. It's interaction.
Okay, so you haven't forgotten. So this Lagrangian is a function of a, b, and psi, not a, b, and lambda.
Yes. Yeah, this lambda.
Just a name for
lambda is just a name. That's what lambda is.
Okay.
So, theory is unchanged.
But
yes.
I'm sorry. Make this. Yeah. When you then introduce this you call the Stackelberg field data.
Yeah.
So what is the property of the new action? The new action is the old action when a equals zero.
Yes.
But you want another property as well, no?
No, it's an action which has a lot of symmetry. Well, it has more symmetry than the original action. And using that symmetry, I can kill eta if I want to.
That's because it was never really there.
It's a trick. You may argue that the theory has been changed by this trick. But I don't know how to do this.
There's a theory that you can prove by doing a Stackelberg redefinition.
Mm-hmm.
The theory, you can't make a non-normalizable theory normalizable. This is typically a long example of reconstruction theory. This is why Stackelberg originally did his work,
mm-hmm.
because they proved that the original non-normalizable theory stayed non-normalizable.
Okay, well, maybe that's a good point. I don't want to claim that introducing this field by making theory normalizable.
You can't make a theory normalizable by field redefinition. You can prove this theory.
well, it's a very good theorem, right? This is how it should be, because non-renormalizability is a physical property, so it better be invariant than all possible field definitions. This kick just allows us to do calculations here. It's not that it changes properties of the theory. So I'm fixing the gauge. Now the interpretation is that we have external fields. Now those A and Psi are external fields. And we integrate over fluctuations of B and fluctuation of the connection. Because this like circular field now plays role of fluctuating connection. Okay, and we do self-dual gauge fixing. This defines the theory completely. We can do calculations with it. First one integrates B out along this thick section. This is self-dual part of F. And this is the original lambda minus 1. And now one has to integrate over F. If not for this term containing psi, this would be just the action for Donaldson theory. So there is a very interesting relation to Donaldson theory, which I haven't explored too much. It's there. So basically, I'm doing calculations in theory, which is Donaldson with an additional composite operator, psi and F.
I mean, you could have gone to Carpentier, Dell, and Jacobson went as far as that term directly, just by integrating out the.
Yeah, CDJ, what they did, they wrote that action, but without the cell dual, of course. So if you want my gauge fixing, is to make a cell dual. And that gives you kinetic term, and this allows to do calculations. But you have to motivate this gauge fixing. That's what I was trying to do.
Sorry,
it's
the exact
computation,
because I mean you have to look into
those.
Where the, oh, yeah, there goes. So there's the unsigned set your power of B that you get, there's a set your power of B. And then the figuring when I integrate the set your power of B, well, it's going to be entangled.
No, you have to be calculated.
Yeah.
The statement is that this is what you get by integrating.
This is as simple as that?
Yeah. You have to do it. I can show you. It's typing in some ways. I can show you the details.
So the ghost terms are?
The ghost terms are psi independent. That's very important thing. So there will be no, when you start building diagrams, including psi, you don't have to worry about the ghosts. Of course, you have to worry about the ghosts for the psi independent sector. Not for the psi independent. Okay, now integrating out F. Let me show you. I'm running out of time. Let me show you, please, what type of vertices you get so that. You see that someone just words. One can really do calculations with this theory. It's very simple. It's not much more complicated than the usual NMLs. So usually NMLs in external field, this is the type of vertices we have. These are external fields. Actually, I'm doing calculations to one loop order only. So this is why I only have two propagating fields. But don't worry about that. And then there are vertices of this type, where this is the curvature field. Then you just
the blue field?
Blue field, this is external A, external gauge field. So these are vertices. The first important, very important property is that in this theory, no derivative of psi ever appear. So I can prove that all these terms, all these diagrams, diverge as well some simple k to the fourth divergence times basically determinant of psi. So no derivatives appear here. And this determinant actually is there anyway. This divergence got cancelled. There was one other determinant of psi somewhere. It got cancelled by that. And these diagrams with one insertion of the external field are all zero if you insert it everywhere. Well, that what that means is that there are no derivatives because.
So this is a normalization of the cosmological constant?
No. This is just some determinant. No, renormalization of cosmological constant would be term with two b's or two f's and psi. Actually, yeah, we'll come to that. This is not related to the cosmological constant.
Yeah, this k to the fourth is confusing. So you have no alternative k to the fourth, which you mentioned before.
Right, but can I explain it? Well, you see that this thing, mass divergence k to the fourth, because all, well, mass dimension of the diagram is the sum of mass dimension of external x. So all these mass dimensions are zero. So this is why divergence is k to the fourth. But it may have been that there are derivatives of psi in it. For example, that term that I was worrying about containing four derivatives of psi, that's what. The fact that this term is not there shows that that term does not arise. Does it make sense? So there are no derivatives, that's the point. And there are no second derivatives at all.
But you could get a term that looks like some, let's say, some cutoff to the fourth times this term sign.
Right.
And that could, why should it be?
This determinant of psi is there anyway, because one of the integrations of B produced me one of the determinant of psi in front. So that, and because that determinant diverges, because it's integral, well, it's not a constant determinant. You have to integrate this determinant over all space, and this is why you get divergence. So I'm saying that the divergence you get from here is the same as the divergence already present after you did integration over B.
That would be maybe only a normalization of the measure of
integration
for psi.
Yeah, it's a measure of integration for psi. Yeah.
Really, this measure of integration for psi would be.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really appear in the action. Right? It's more a measure.
Yeah. Okay, I should speed up. We're really running out of time. And then diagrams computed, diagrams which are non zero. Going here. This is order 1 in psi. This is order 2 in psi. You see, well, there are quite a few diagrams to compute. Not very easy. I computed them all. I computed only the divergent part because I needed to extract a divergent function. That's reasonably. Well, it's not too hard. The results are the fact that these are the only diagrams that appear proves that the normalized action. Oops. That the normalized action stays, it has this form, and actually calculations indeed confirm that, well, you only have f plus arising. So the action has this form, but indeed this psi, indeed this quantity in front becomes complicated. It starts containing powers of psi, powers of traces of psi, and so on. And all this is computable. And so what I also computed is the beta function. This is the beta function for the gauge coupling constant. This is the standard value for it in Donaldson theory, or in n equals 2 supernumeraries. It's the same beta function.
So but is it clear, sorry, one question before. Is it clear that the anti-circular part never appears, or that the thing is preserved? Because
that's not clear.
It's because you just on the
I just
that really it's not the detailed structure.
Survives, yeah, it's not clear, I agree. This has to be checked. One has to also quantize anti-spellable effect and see if they renormalize in the same way, if I know anomalies appearing and so on. I haven't done it. So let's go back to the beta function. This is the beta function of the coupling constant that I introduced. Just go back as far as before. When I talk about modified variety, I introduce a new coupling constant, which is the leading order in phi coupling constant. So that's what I was trying to compute how it runs, because it's a physical one. Once you fix normalization of this term, this order phi squared coupling constant is well defined. And you can compute it. So that's the result. It's negative. And importantly, it has the form, well, it's minus epsilon alpha, the coupling constant. So what it means for the running, at least let's write down the formulas. So the running of alpha is the usual one, alpha mu. It's the usual formula, like with Kapanian-Mills theory, except the value of beta function is different. It's asymptotically free because for large momentum, it goes to zero. And then this part, this guy, G tilde mu, is G tilde mu 1 plus 4 C2 alpha mu naught log mu naught to the power 4. The power that appears here is just the ratio of these two. It's 16 over 4. So this is the writing of that guy. Well, you see, it's again, it's like asymptotically, but in the sense that for large energies, it decreases. Now, I haven't done, I haven't finished the calculations, but these are doable calculations. One can compute beta functions of all those coefficients. Not much harder, really. This thing is simple enough. This is feasible calculation to do. And I expect all beta functions look like that. It will be alpha, well, minus some coefficient alpha times the corresponding coupling constant. So if this is so, this would mean that there's just one scale in this theory. Because you see, this is a scale when this denominator becomes one. Because it's this denominator that always controls the many. So at this scale, all the coupling constants will be order one or the constant. Some things that, well, their values at some energy scale, but for the one, so to say. So, now interpretation. So, this is what I was saying. If there is just a single scale in this theory, this is what has to be checked. This scale clearly determines when all these corrections become important, like a usual non perturbative quantum gravity, usual perturbative quantum gravity metric based. We have Newton scale, if you turn this across, when all these higher orders of R become important. Well, there is a scale here. It's again a scale when all these corrections become equally important. But this, the meaning of these corrections is very different. These are the corrections that signal departure from metricity. So I want to say that because we don't see this departure from metricity at R scales, therefore, the scale of the theory has to be set to be very large, to be very large, cosmological only. Because for all distances larger than that, you would see departure from metricity. All these terms would become important. So basically, I want to do something very, very strange. I want to say that there is a scale like in QCD, but we live in the UV region of this theory. And those departures, well, that scale is cosmological scale. This is very iconoclastic, I understand that. That's the interpretation I would like to propose. Yes?
So I'm really confused about this idea of the scale. Because when you talk about the scale, you talk about the scale as measured by the metric you use to do the gauge fixing.
Yeah.
Which is a flat space metric, which is just a gauge fixing theory. So no physics should depend on that.
But
so
no, there might be physics in the writing of these coupling constants.
Maybe
you're right.
Maybe
that, like, we don't know how.
Yes, yeah, maybe that this interpretation there is. I think
there is a lot.
Solution of a scale.
Yeah.
Is, so far, I mean, this scale is as measured by the gauge fixing a metric you use, and you could use it.
It's really the scale when the next term becomes equally important to the previous one. So first of all, I would like to argue that there is a scale in this theory. There is a scale, like you see, physics changes at that scale. And this should be independent of any gauge fixing, so anything. This is just property of theory.
Yeah, but the scale enters by what happens when you rescale the gauge fixing metric. That's
a yeah, scale comes in that way, but the fact that there is a scale should be independent of all that. And the fact that there is just one scale in this theory, this is what I'm trying to emphasize. There is just one scale. It's not Planck constant. Planck constant never appears. It's just this scale with all these terms become important. Yes, Lee?
Yeah, I mean, there are similar issues that have arisen before either in pure Bond square theories or even R plus R squared, R plus Bond square theories.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I understand what you mean, it's really the coupling constant, trace back, it's really the coupling constant of the bi-squared term,
yeah,
which is asymptotically free, and which is therefore becoming important at some scale.
Mm-hmm.
And there, I forget the name of the one of the Bondish people, the guy who was Connecticut.
Right.
Speculating about this for a long time.
The big difference is that wild squared theory will have higher derivatives in action. This theory doesn't.
Sure. But the basic idea is that as soon as you have dimensionless coupling constants and the curvature squared kinds of things,
right.
It's not abelian, you can have an astrologically free coupling. As soon as you have an astrologically free coupling,
I agree. All these ideas were played with, but in the metric formulation. Yeah, these are the old ideas. There are many, many works I can also cite. But there is a famous work by Seitling, who considered R squared theory, showed that it's asymptotically free and analyzable, and there is no space time problem in that theory.
Those theories, of course.
Yeah, but those theories have those. At least. At this naive level, without analyzing anything, these theories don't seem to have ghosts because there are no high derivatives in them.
But Krug,
you don't have my
opinion. Yeah.
Krug, if I understand right, you never, if running around your roots was the B field?
No, B field is very easy to integrate over. It's the gauge field that controls
the A field.
A field.
So you never did the quantum mechanics of the psi field?
No. Psi is always in background. And I should finish, so my next slide is a summary, and then I'll try to say how to interpret the psi field as external field. So the summary, the Lebesgue invariant is incomplete once it's supplemented by this curvature-dependent trace torque. This seems to be a very robust conclusion. You don't need any perturbative coefficients to say that. Just those terms must be added. So if you take Lebesgue formulation seriously, then you should also take this partial chromatricity seriously. I argued that this non-metricity becomes important for large curvatures. I studied using particular gauge fixing this trigonometric. I studied theory perturbatively around fixed background of psi and a. I would like to emphasize how much simpler this theory is than the usual perturbative quantum gravity. You saw on the actually slides cubic term and forced order term. Of the expansion of fine scale metric. This is portable and vertical. So many very complicated vertices. In this theory, calculations, most of the calculations I did by hand, even without the computer. So this is much simpler theory. Structure of the derivatives is very transparent. And again, I prove that the effect is just in producing the three normalized curvature field together with the trace term. No derivatives of psi appear. The beta functions can be computed. I'm trying to compute higher order beta functions, but really any order, not just order by order. Any order is possible. There is a key property in this theory which allows calculations of any order. The key vertex, which is psi AA, has a projector-like property. If you take two vertices like that, this vertex behaves like a vertex is composite of psi. So you don't have to, you can just forget about this momentum here. Well, I can write it down, but there is a property that you can treat such vertex as a composite vertex. And this property is very important to put
it over a complete loop?
No, just it's just the property of the propagator.
So
there is a property. PQ, indices, mu. So M, mu, PQ. P1, P2, P3, P1, P2, and row P2, P3, 1/P2². This is N U row P1, P3.
P1 equals P3, like if I close that off to a loop, what happens?
Well, then you would be taking trace of this guy is zero, it's anti-symmetric.
The loop gets killed off.
Yeah, not any loop, of course. If you. I'm saying something. Actually, it's not zero, sorry. I don't want to give too many details, but this guy is not zero. It's, is yeah, it's PQ domain minus Q mu B and with the epsilon PQ term. So yeah, if you take a trace selection, we don't know, it's proportional to BQ. But that projector-like property is very important for the calculations. It's one of the like, miracles of this theory. It's there. And I speculate that we'll even bump the scale of the theory. So that we are really...
You didn't put any matter in, so
no.
You don't have any grounds for the speculations. Because, look, if I have a binary system, which I know that it needs gravitational wave, mm-hmm. right? If I, by any stretch of imagination, I couple this gravitational wave to an elementary particle, and I know that I will immediately arrive to UV divergences at one loop, right? So do you have to modify the UV behavior of the theory in any way? I'm not saying it's not impossible, that's what I...
But I'm saying that this is what I do. By adding, I changed the theory, it's not metric anymore. So
do you have binary systems emitting gravitational waves? No.
Of course, yeah. But this
well,
is, this
well,
is
then
like...
Then I will give you the data.
Yeah, so I've only worked on this theory for half a year. You cannot assume that I can do all possible calculations within half a year.
No.
But this is possible.
The question.
Yeah,
I'm saying
the questions are right.
No matter what the theory is, right? As soon as you have gravitational waves coupled to TMU, immediately you get.
This has to be studied, and this is what I will conclude with other questions. It's possible to study all that.
What's the reason for this development?
Well, because TMU times the gravitational HMU, as Kirill pointed out in the very beginning, is already containing 1 hour on Planck, right? So when you put the loop out of this, you immediately get the unit difference. I don't need to know what happens at the Planck scale. If I may say, the divergence would be, you know, if you integrate from the mass of the electron to the mass of the neutrino, you would see the divergence. It would be there.
Can I just finish? And,
yeah.
So, well, open questions are listed here. Most important one, because interpretational one, whether my interpretation has any chance of being right. But there are more technical, more real questions that can be studied. One is interpretation of the quantum theory in external field. Remember that I kept psi as external field. This is actually not a stupid thing to do. And there are examples, for example, Gross-Given model. This auxiliary field sigma is a low energy degree of freedom of the theory. One gets most of the physics of the theory by computing effective action for it. One immediately sees chiral symmetry breaking from that effective action. So, well, psi, we know that psi is really its local degree of freedom of the gravitational field, it's a graviton. So, you know, by keeping it not integrated over and integrating over all other fields, producing effective action for it, we do have, that's what we have, that's the field that we can extract physical information from the effective action for this field. So this is one possible interpretation of this. Dependence on the gauge, I took a very particular gauge, very interesting to see how much of this becomes the gauge, higher loops possible to move. And finally, lots of interesting questions about modified gravity. This is very simple modified gravity theory. Moreover, matter couplings to it are known there in CDJ paper. So just take this system and study corrections, study predictions. There are lots of things to do. Okay, I'll stop.
Can you couple matter to your modified version and then just argue that at short distances we see the usual matter couplings for a metric theory, but at large distances this falls apart? I mean, I don't see any reason a priori would have to couple matter in at the beginning and then modify. It seems to me you could take thing you get at the end and then couple matter after that. Because all you can argue that at short distances the two things are equivalent, so you don't know what to couple matter to.
Well, if it's a fundamental theory, one has to couple matter to fundamental theory, to fundamental degrees of freedom.
Why? Why can't you couple? Well, before integrating out the fields, you have to, but you could couple it to the modified Stueberg thing before integrating it out.
Well, I'm not sure if I understand this question. I know metal couplings.
Pardon me?
I know metal couplings explicitly, so I would just take the known couplings and try to be quantum theory.
Well, we don't know what they are at large distances. We only know what they are at short distances.
What I say, what I mean is that I know the action of how to couple matter to this modified variety. The couplings that were spelled out were to unmodified variety, but nothing prevents me from adding this extra term to gravity action.
Well, let me ask something
else. Lee, you had a question?
Yeah, I have two. So one of them is, we know, and people study lots of modified gravity theories that are important for large distances, where you have functions at the scalar part of the curvature.
Right.
And they are all equivalent to coupling some scalar part.
Right.
Presumably, yours are entirely different than those because you have the component from the bottom curvature. So I just want to check and make sure.
Yeah, it better be.
Okay. So my second question, point is, look, I mean, if you take the Gross-Nouveau model mm-hmm. and you try to treat the sigma field as a classical effective field,
right.
What happens when you say treating dimensional randomization? What happens is you get away with it in anything less than four dimensions and four minus epsilon for any dimension. When you go to four dimensions, there appear divergent terms proportional to derivative of sigma squared, which require a counter term.
Okay.
And those require a divergent counter term, which essentially says mm-hmm. that in four dimensions, sigma is as fundamental a field as any other field, and you have to treat it quantum mechanically.
Yeah.
And
When I was talking about Gross-Nouveau, I meant two-dimensional model.
Right. But since you postponed, if the psi field is analogous to the sigma field,
mm-hmm.
I guess what I'm querying is, I mean, it's a beautiful idea. It's it's a very interesting development. But what it will rest on is, can you really get away with treating psi as a classical field? Because as soon as you have, and you sort of shut it off terms and derivative of psi, blah, blah, blah,
mm-hmm.
blah. Okay. But as soon as you have terms and derivative of psi appearing next, in the effective action with divergences,
mm-hmm.
you're going to need counter terms and derivatives of psi.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing is just going to be that you reordered perturbation theory in some non-normalizable theory
mm-hmm.
so as to put off the divergences artificially to two loops rather than one loop, basically.
My claim is that divergences do not appear. Divergences containing derivative do not appear.
Never appear.
Well, in the theory as I studied it, in the way I gauge fix it, they do not appear.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, that's a good point, but I don't have proof. But.
Okay, so there, that's where it's distinct from what happens to the Gross-Nouveau model.
It's a one loop, right? You may going through this experience
mm-hmm.
to discover some problems of two loops.
So that's a good point.
This
yes.
one loop is perfectly okay. Effective action.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
that's really
mm-hmm.
okay. I have a related question. Mm-hmm. Because you started with a theory which is double normalizer, and you had effectively an asymptotically free theory. You need to do some theory definitions. But how can you make a bodily normalizable theory normalizable by having something that's really normalizable?
So we change the theory.
No?
Only change the theory.
No, but it doesn't.
Well, claiming that I changed the theory, this is theory different from the other, and this is why I behave differently.
Well, currently speaking, I can see that you have a bodily normalizable theory. And that is a non-normalizable piece that cancels the non-normalizability.
But anyway, isn't
makes sense to me.
Isn't
this? I don't understand.
Isn't this what I?
Yes,
there was non-normalizable theory is just one psi. So when I added all powers of psi.
Yeah, but it's intuitively it doesn't make sense to me. The problem is I don't understand it.
So I have a question. So. I think the way I understand what you did, I would split the results in two parts. So the second part is what you showed. You study this theory, lambda, F plus, F plus.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can go back to the action. And there you show that, at least at one loop, you know, there's no derivative of the line system, and it has all these nice homology property, and that's extremely beautiful. Now, there is this other statement that this theory is equivalent to the original drop, which is gravity. So the second statement, I just believe everything I've seen in the video. But the first statement, which is that this
statement is
the same as the one without the, well, you know, the BF. So it's okay, we didn't see the detail, but it's harder for me to.
Well, the detail, essentially all of them are here.
Yeah, but let me tell you why, it's a simple argument why I have a problem. So we can go back to lambda plus F plus. Suppose, I mean, all what you say doesn't depend on what lambda is. It could be field dependent or not field dependent or just a constant. Suppose that lambda is just a constant or proportional to delta by B. Then the initial theory is just F wedge F, which is purely topological. Whereas this theory is Young-Mills theory.
No, F plus is also purely topological theory. It's all something.
So F plus.
F plus is just null something. The fact that there is some running on the coupling comes.
Well, no, but the propagator is non.
The propagator is usually a Mills propagator, but the vertices are different. Well, and there are different ghosts, that's important.
Sorry, if I write F plus, it's just F wedge F plus.
No, F plus is really well.
Plus F wedge F U.
No, it's minus, except.
Sorry, it's just the sum of F or J, which is
okay, yeah. At gauge theory level, this is just Young-Mills theory.
This is just Young-Mills.
But the ghost sector is very different.
Well, okay. But that's why maybe I got a bit confused, but it seems to me the second part is to look at this theory, which is, let's say, from that constant,
pure Young-Mills. Right. It's a topological theory. It's Donaldson theory.
But not, okay. But not the one you wrote.
Yeah. This is the one I wrote. That's the gauge part.
But you presuppose lambda is proportional to delta ID. This is just Young-Mills.
Right. But
so it's not topological.
It's not topological. But the ghost sector of this theory, there is so much symmetry together. I mean, there is so much symmetry that it makes it topological. And this topological theory is just the one that's
operating. Honestly, I'm a bit correct.
Well, this
at this stage, I'm a bit confused.
There are reviews on that, though. This is something very well known. I can try to explain to you.
Yeah, but reviews on this, so, okay. The quantization of this sector will be the same as so maybe you can look at that, but at least at this stage, it's more.
It's a fact that F plus is a topological theory, it's a Donaldson theory.
Wait.
With appropriate ghost.
Yeah. F plus is. Young-Mills is a theta parameter proportional to the coupling constant, so if you don't say it.
Well, it's the same difference between Young-Mills and super Young-Mills. The A part of the action is the same, but of course properties of the theory are totally different.
But you never use any
ghosts? Oh yeah, because ghosts are not coupled to psi. They're coupled to A. So when at higher loops when I start doing calculations, I will need ghosts as well. But not, because I cannot draw any diagram without external ghost lines, loose ghosts. But at higher loops, I will need ghost vertices and ghost propagators.
Is it fundamental to have a zero cosmological constant to construct this?
No, not really. No.
To get the free term.
The right point of view is that the propagator is provided by the gauge fixing. This is what happens in Donaldson theory. You can say the Donaldson theory is just FF. It's a topological action, actually zero action. And so all of the dynamics is provided by the gauge fixing. And so it's not fundamental. One can put a cosmological constant to zero.
But wouldn't the leading term of the action be cubic in that case? Because it would start with
no gauge fixing provided.
Like each pixel will give you again just a
quadratic. Yeah, that's, you see, in those, for example, there is a divergence, coupling constant runs, but it's not the coupling constant in front of the action F, which M, mm-hmm. because that coupling constant cannot run. This guy, you would not even see the perturbation theory because it's a topological quantity, it's total divergence. So the coupling constant don't. What I'm saying is that 1 over g squared, sorry, f, f, if this is your action, this cannot run. But the coupling constant of Donald's theory does run. And this coupling constant is 1 for that action. So it's not a cosmological constant. This is a tricky point.
So let's first.
Thank you.